if you hear this, then you know you're drinking coffee and white, and it's mocha latte time. Welcome to Hawaii. This week we have interviews with world-famous coffee taster Willem Boot, as well as a visit to Waikiki Beach and the coffee scenes from Kona Country and Hilo on the Big Island, and of course an all-new hit from Mad Dog coming up next. Welcome to Search for the Best Mocha Latte in the World. This is Circus Boy Nathan, your host, coming to you from beautiful Waikiki Beach here in Honolulu, Hawaii. This is my weekly podcast where I come to you from somewhere in the world and give you the local coffee scene, searching for the best mocha latte in the world, and cool interviews with cool coffee people. And you guys are in for a real treat this week. This is my first official podcast from Hawaii. If you listened to last week's episode, I was in the airport in Atlanta and then on the plane on the way here at 30,000 feet. So now I am been here about a week, and lots of good stuff to coming up in this podcast. I'm going to give you a rundown of the cupping workshop, and then we got a great interview with Willem Boot. I got to sit down and talk with them a little bit, and then we got the coffee scenes from, oh my goodness, what is it, I guess Atlanta, and then from here in Hawaii, Kona, on the Big Island, and Oahu. So yeah, welcome to the podcast, thank you for joining me, and I'm sitting here right now, as I said, on Waikiki Beach, which is one of the most famous beaches in the entire world. It's, I guess, it gained its fame for being a surfer's beach, which, as I look out, I'm sitting right here on the bay and looking out over the water, and it's a sunny day. I'd say probably in the mid-80s, a light breeze coming from the, I guess it's from the southwest, maybe, or southeast, and so just enough for waves. There's palm trees in front of me, and then about, oh, I'd say 50 yards is where the water starts, and there's, I'm looking out over the water right now, and there's probably at least 100 surfers, maybe more, out there riding the waves, and just beautiful waves coming in. I can see why it's a surfing beach, because the waves, they break. Most beaches you go to, the break of the waves is, you know, maybe, oh, I don't know, 15 seconds, maybe 10 seconds, you know, but here, it's a really, really long break, like over, oh, I don't know, probably almost 400 yards that the wave travels before it finally loses the energy, and which is perfect for surfing. So yeah, there's lots of surfers here. I'm looking down the beach, and lots of high-rises and resorts and hotels and such, and some planes taking off from the airport there, Honolulu Airport, up the shoreline, and can see the mountains in the far off there. There's a couple ships that are docked down the way, barges, and across the street is a busy main drag here in Waikiki, and you're here with me on this sunny day. So yeah, first week in Hawaii. My goodness, where do I start? I'm not gonna be able to tell everything, because you know that would that would turn this solely into a travel podcast, and there's so much to talk about on the travel side of things. But just in recap, I started with first 2 days here, I started at the cupping workshop. Now, some of you are wondering what cupping is. Well, it's basically the coffee equivalent of wine tasting. and you use all, there's all kinds of terms and several criteria that you use, and we'll hear a little bit more about that later when we talk down, sit down and talk with Will and Boot. But got to do that for 2 days, and it was really cool. It's right in the middle of Kona country, and for those of you who don't know what Kona is, it's, you know, you may have heard the name and know it's Hawaii and know that the coffee is really expensive. It's Kona is kind of like an appellation as in a name, you know, like in wine you have Bordeaux wines, or for example champagne can only be called champagne if it's made in that part of France. Well, same thing for Kona coffees, and part of what makes them so unique is that, you know, these, all the Hawaiian islands made up of, I think there's 5 or 6 separate islands, and the biggest island is called the Big Island, or Hawaii is its particular name, and each of the islands have their own name, and Kona is on the, on the southwest side of that island, and it's in volcanic soil because all the islands are all volcanic. You know, that's they're part of an island chain. As the tectonic plate moves over a hot spot in the middle of the Atlantic, all the island chains were formed, and it's actually still growing. If you go to the southeast side of the Big Island, you can actually see active volcanoes and steam plumes and all kinds of good stuff. So anyways, Kona coffee is famous because it has there's particular microclimates. As you know, Arabica trees grow best in, I believe it's between 1 to 2,000 feet all the way up to 6 and 7,000 feet. I'm just going off the top of my head. I have to look for exact altitudes, but it grows best in that. And in this case, it's volcanic soil that it grows in. So it gives it, and then the climate, there's microclimates all over the southwest side of the island, which is where that Kona coffee belt is. And, you know, it originally started back in the 1860s, maybe a little bit later. And they were growing mainly sugar here. And a lot of the Japanese immigrants had been working on sugar plantations. And they came over to that west side of the island, and they said, "We don't want to grow sugar. We're sick and tired of sugar. You know, we want to grow. We want to become," because they were pretty much slaves. Once they gained their freedom, they came over to Kona and wanted to grow something different. And you know, sugar was all the rave, but they said they wanted to do coffee and grow coffee, and that's kind of how it started. And it's just kind of, there's been several changes and so forth since then, but yeah, it's gained its own name and own taste. And we'll hear a lot more about Kona next week when we're actually going to get to sit down with a Kona farmer from Vince from Kena Coffee, and we're going to get to sit and hear a first-hand perspective on growing Kona coffee in Kona, Hawaii, and on the Big Island there. So you're gonna have to stay tuned next week for that. So yeah, but great stuff. The cupping workshop, it was a 2-day workshop, and I was the only non-coffee farmer, I believe, in the workshop of about 15, and a lot of good information. I learned, you know, exponentially more than I knew going in, and it was worth every penny. And I'm really glad I did it. I learned all about the different types of processing challenges faced around the world, and in Kona in particular. Learned how to cup coffees, what to look for, different indicators, and just got to meet some really, really cool people that are very passionate about their product, about their coffee, about growing it and drinking it. So it was just a great time there at Kona Community College. And you know, got, and I also spent the rest of the week then after I finished, because I'm on vacation, of course, but got to spend the time driving around the island, got to go up to Mauna Kea, where the telescopes are at 14,000 feet. And let me just say that it's probably not a good idea to put caffeine in your body, like coffee, when you're at 14,000 feet altitude because there's 40% less atmosphere up there. And when you're that short on oxygen, it kind of does weird things to your head. But good stuff. So yeah, so that's been my weekend in Hawaii. I got to try out coffee shops, which I'm going to talk a little bit later. And now got to spend some time in Hilo. Went to had coffee at the southernmost restaurant in the U.S. of A. That's right. In case you didn't know, the Hawaii is actually further south than Florida and Key West. So down there, I think it's Na'alehu, in southernmost point on the Big Island, there's a restaurant, and that's the southernmost. They boast the southernmost restaurant in the U.S. of A. And had coffee and breakfast there at the kind of a bakery. So very good stuff. Very good stuff. And I would say, for the record, in general, the coffee, in general, everywhere is better on the continental U.S. Because Kona's right here. But then again, on the other hand, I have kind of found that the espresso side of things is lacking. But from talking to people and going around to these different coffee shops, that's slowly changing as it is on the mainland. Baristas are starting to get into barista competitions, and they're definitely starting to create more of a barista style culture here in Hawaii. So very good stuff. So yeah, this been a great week, and I'm going to give you one more podcast next week from Hawaii, and we're going to have that interview with Vince from Kena Coffee. He's a sole independent farmer, and we get a firsthand view on that. And yeah, so cool. Well, I've been jibber jabbering long enough here on the beach, and there goes they don't have seagulls here. They kind of have these white looking pigeons that come up to you, and if you have anything edible, they definitely try to steal it from you. They're thieving pigeons, I guess you could say. But oh my goodness, yeah, good stuff. So cool. Well, I'm gonna get right on the interview, and I'll save my tasty travel Hawaii tidbits of advice for next week's podcast. I won't bore you with that this week. So cool. I'm going to get on straight to the interview here. You're going to get to meet Willem Boot, who, I don't know if I mentioned it in the interview, but this is, had a blast doing this interview. He is one of the best coffee tasters in the entire world. There's a thing called the Cup of Excellence, rather. And he was one of the original founders of the Cup of Excellence, and kind of one of the people who created. There's a chart that you go by when you do cupping of names and indicators and so forth. And he is one of the guys who helped create the chart of kind of tasting coffee. So you're getting to meet someone really special here in the coffee world. So I'm excited. Hopefully you're excited, and I'm going to stop talking and bring the interview, and I'll come back and wrap up with the coffee scene. So. All right, so I'm here in Kona, in the middle of Kona country, in right on the beach, the Kona Beach, with Willem Boot, who is the owner and founder of Willem Consulting. And what's your full title?
My company name is Boot Coffee Consulting.
Boot Coffee Consulting, okay. And welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here. I just spent the past 2 days in his cupping workshop, which was phenomenal. I learned like 100 times more than I knew before going in, so it was great. Could you describe a little bit about what you do with your company, what it is?
Yeah, we work in quality improvement, and we help roasting companies, mainly in the US and sometimes outside, and green coffee producers, usually outside of the US, sometimes in the US territory like Hawaii. We help roasters and producers of coffee with quality improvements, and that can be sometimes helping them become better tasters of their own coffee, or help them just do their own jobs better.
Now, let's talk a little bit about cupping, because that's a lot of things, you know, people hear about cupping and they may have heard of it or heard rumors, maybe it's a secretive process. How would you describe cupping to the average person, you know, say going, you know, getting their coffee in the morning? How would you explain cupping to that person?
Cupping coffee is basically, it's just like drinking coffee, but then instead of doing the whole process in maybe 30 or 60 seconds, a coffee cupper, he or she takes really the utmost time for every single step of that process. So, well, for a consumer, it can take 30, 60 seconds to make a conclusion. For a coffee cupper, it can take 30 minutes to make a conclusion about coffee. So the coffee cupper really, what I call, tries to get through to the essence of the bean, the essence of what this coffee has to offer.
And one thing you said during the workshop that really hit me is that, you know, because I think cupping is an intimidating thing to the average person, because they see these people, you know, slurping and then, you know, spitting in the spittoon, and it looks like, you know, and they describe the coffee in these elaborate ways, and it seems like it's such a difficult thing. But one of the things you said in the workshop was, if you love coffee, you're halfway there, right?
Yeah, that's like, it takes a while before you become familiar with all these flavors and all these aromas, and I never stop learning myself, so for me every experience is a new one, and it really takes the passion for the coffee. Without the really liking it, without really loving what you do, without the passion, you, with the passion, you become curious all the time, and like most hours of the day I'm always out there to learn more about coffee myself, and I try to bring that over to the people I work with.
Now, there's actually beyond cupping, it kind of became, you started actually a competition with cupping, is that correct?
No, the competitions that I organize a couple to a few times per year are basically focusing on going into a country and organizing for the producers in those countries, or for the farmers, a venue where they can showcase the best of their products. And so it's really a competition where the producers compete for the honor of who has the best coffee. And like the last year, the last 12 months, I organized competitions like these in Colombia and in Papua New Guinea and also in Ethiopia. And it's a lot of fun, but it's also a lot of hard work, because sometimes you have hundreds and hundreds of producers, farmers participating. They're, for them, winning or getting in a high position in a competition is a big thing, because that can mean for them much more income. So it's apart from being like a festive celebration of quality, it's for the farmers and the producers, it's a real case of importance of being successful. So it brings me always in contact with the essence of the country's coffee producers.
Now, when did this start? Because I know this has been, I mean, as far as coffee history goes, which coffee's been around for, it's been over 1,000 years, that, you know, this is a pretty recent development, you know, because obviously they weren't cupping 500 years ago. So when did these cupping competitions come about?
Nah, the cupping itself, I think, is as old as maybe 80 years. When coffee became what we say a true commodity, being, you know, more than just a good that's consumed but also being traded, that's when we had the first cuppers. But in the old days, they were pretty simple in their approach. That their focus was more on detecting defects and looking for potential product flaws, because there's nothing as bad as trading a product that isn't right. But cupping as we know it now is not that old, because nowadays, the last 15 years, 10 years specifically, you have this new generation of coffee tasters, coffee cuppers, who are looking for quality. They're looking for the value of the product, or for the attributes it brings to the table, and that's something relatively new.
Now, these coffees that you're cupping, these aren't coffees like that you would buy in the grocery store. These are more specialty coffees that are offered through certain roasters throughout the country. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's like these coffees only represent less than 5% of what's produced out in the world. And so these finest coffees in the world, yeah, you have to look hard for them. The retailers or the roasters that buy them, they do a lot of effort to find these coffees. Then often, in most cases, they do a lot of work to roast them to the optimal degree. And also, they will try generally to do everything to keep them as fresh as possible. And that's very important, very essential. Yeah.
And this, I think the end result has been really pushing the bar higher. Have you noticed the coffee is getting better each year that you do the competitions?
Mainstream coffee quality, I think, in the US is definitely improving. In Europe, I'm not sure, because there's in some point it's improving, in some point it's not. But there's definitely more awareness with consumers about quality, about maybe even about the fact that that there are single origin coffees out there. So I definitely think we are on a roll with something. Yes.
For someone who is just, you know, drinks coffee every day and they love coffee, where can the average consumer look to find something, you know, special if they're seeking out, you know, if they're having a special occasion or want to serve something special after a meal, where would they look to find these kind of coffees?
Well, I think you could, for example, look in your Yellow page, look for the local roasteries, or you could click in Google freshly roasted coffee. There's a number of retailers in the US, roastering retailers that have local shops, but that supply over the entire country. You could call the Specialty Coffee Association of America and ask them for specific addresses. So there's a number of ways. I think the most important thing is, once you have found that store or that place, ask them how fresh the coffee is. When was it roasted? Ask them, you know, about some more information about this coffee, who produces it, where, what type of practices, and the more they can tell you about it, most likely the more they really deserve your business.
To give people an idea of how sought after these coffees are, what's the highest price that a coffee has gone for on auction?
Now that's, as far as I know, right now, still the Panama Esmeralda State, which is a geisha variety, and it's produced in Panama by a company that has specialized in selecting these geisha beans grown on geisha trees, and there's no relationship with the Japanese geisha, but this is an exotic Ethiopian coffee variety that just has a beautiful jasmine aftertaste and a beautiful acidity like in tamarinds, and just a very fine and refined flavor that is very hard to find anywhere in the world.
It's very much, would you equate the tasting of it and like to akin to wine, or is it a whole different school of thought entirely?
Yeah, to some degree, the analogy with wine goes there, but with this coffee, it's really you really have to judge this coffee for itself. And like the last time I cupped this coffee was at the Panama competition, the yearly annual coffee competition, and every year there's more and more cuppers coming to this competition because they all know that it's partially about the geishas. And we had a large group of cuppers, some of the most experienced in the world, and I gave this geisha coffee at 98 points, 98 out of 100. So my score was one of the highest, but just simply because it deserves it. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, just give you guys a frame of reference. All coffees are rated on a scale between 80 and 100 points, and if it's exceptionally bad, like drinkable, it's you can detract points that down to 75 there on that. So yeah, no, very cool. Now, what I have to ask you, what's your favorite? I mean, after you taste so much coffee, I mean, that's your part of your job, obviously, and I'm sure you taste literally hundreds, maybe even more coffees a year. Do you still enjoy drinking coffee?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, for me, but for me, it's drinking coffee is not a simple thing, because I preferably make my own coffee, obviously, and I never take my cup of coffee for granted, so that means that when I prepare my coffee, I really try to do the best job possible, because I just know, you know, it's so important to do it right. And sometimes I take minutes and minutes and minutes to make my first espresso of the day. Sometimes it takes a lot of time to get the grind right and the extraction right. So I'd rather do it 5 or 10 times over before drinking my espresso than that I accept a mediocre cup of espresso.
And when he talks about creating his cup of the day, he's not lying, because you basically have a lab in your house, is that correct, with roasters and all these scientific analyzation devices and everything, is that correct?
Yes, I have my own lab where I do courses with students. There's most of my students, they find me through reference, and then we teach for people from the industry, primarily small courses where people can learn about cupping and roasting and blending and very specific specialized coffee topics. Yes, and this lab is indeed, it's not in my house, but it's in front of my house. It's I need to walk about 20 feet to get into a lab or coffee tasting studio, and yeah, that feels good, yeah, to be that near.
It's pretty much like a candy shop for anybody who's into coffee pretty seriously, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You have a, what was it, like an old Probat, I think, like a vintage Probat in there with the temperature controls and everything, I think.
Yeah, it's a 1948 Probat that's reconditioned by the original manufacturer, and I have a 1958 Gotthard sample roaster that's reconditioned, and it works pretty well. And then I have a 1932 La Pavoni espresso machine, which is from one of the first series, commercially made series of espresso machines. It's actually not even the handle machine, because that came out later. I think that was Betzira that came out with the handle machine. No, this is really before those years, yeah. So I'm all about coffee.
I'm sure people listening will have noticed by now your accent and wonder, you know, where your accent's from. Can you get a little idea of your background?
Yeah, I was born in Holland, like half an hour west of Amsterdam, but northwest, and then grew up half an hour east of Amsterdam, and then lived for more than 15 years of my life in Amsterdam. So yeah, that's a wonderful city, but now I live far away, 6,000 miles away from Amsterdam, near San Francisco, north of San Francisco in Marin County. That's where my lab is, yeah.
Very cool. Now, what's just kind of wrap up in your whole career in coffee? I mean, it's obviously something you love and that you're passionate about. Is there any specific memory that stands out, you know, that you really cherish in your career? That's something, you know, that in your lifetime you never would have had you not been involved with coffee and going in the direction that you have with your, you know, creating your company and a couple of Cup of Excellence competition and so forth.
No, I would say for me the most memorable have been all the moments, many moments I've spent with coffee producers who I always try to help by just showing them different perspectives of how to improve not just their coffee or their professions, but improve their life. Because for millions of producers out there in the world, in countries like Ethiopia and Colombia and Papua New Guinea, Bolivia, coffee is for them a lifeline. And so when you help them only with a little bit of knowledge, you can make a major difference in their lives. And that's where some of my best memories are, that you visit these folks and spend time with them and teach them, and then when you sometimes meet them a year later, that you can really see the improvements they have been able to make in their life. That's to me most precious.
That's great. Well, thank you for coming on the podcast and your website. What do you want to give your website and information?
Yeah, my website is www.bootcoffee.com, and that's where you can read a lot about some of my experiences, some of the pictures I made worldwide, and you can read about the coffee courses. And we're trying to keep it up to date, but sometimes it's hard to follow and to keep up, but we try our best. So.
Yeah. Well, you're traveling a large chunk of the year, right?
Yeah, about half of the time. Yeah.
We're much akin in that sense, that we're both travelers of a sort. Definitely,
yes.
Definitely. So, well, thank you very much, Willem, for coming on the podcast, and I wish you the best of luck in the future with your business and future coffee endeavors.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay, so I'm back here. I'm in Oahu now, which is right up the coast from Waikiki on the north shore of Oahu. And I'm going to jump right into the coffee scenes for this week. I have two from the airports on the way here, and then I'm going to give you the coffee scenes from the Big Island, where I was in Kona and Hilo there last week. And then I'll save all the coffee places on Oahu for next week's podcast. So the two coffee places, the airports, I have the Coffee Beanery in Houston, Texas, and that's at the George Bush International Airport. And I wrote here, wow, in a bad way, that is. I seriously think that they took regular coffee and put powdered milk in it, and one of the worst things I've ever tasted in my life. 0.3 beans. So that was pretty bad. And if you want to check out the bean scale, you can always go to bestmochalatte.blogspot.com and check out the rating scale. And I usually am a little bit behind on getting the blurbs up there. These reviews that you hear me talk about, I type them out and put a little picture that I try to take, if I remember, the coffee shops up there on that website. So yeah, good stuff. Now, next up is Atlanta, Georgia. It's Cafe Siena, and this was a little place, kind of little cafe. You could sit down, nice decor. One of the only places that actually had a espresso machine that wasn't a super automatic, meaning it was a semi-automatic. They had a portafilter that you had put in, but It looked like they had coffee grinders, but the lady working used coffee pods, and maybe they do that because it's cheaper, easier, more consistent, you know, less training involved. I don't know. But I was had hopes because it would look like a standard Nuova Simonelli machine. But I wrote here, I guess you can't find good coffee in airports. Served auto-to-go cup, Aston whipped cream, subpar espresso from pods, weak chocolate, wouldn't drink again, 3.1 beans. And yeah, after my airport coffee experiences, I feel bad for pilots. I saw pilots walking around with coffee from these places, and it's like, you know, those are the people flying our planes, and they're drinking really bad coffee. So I don't know, maybe I'll have to interview a pilot. If anybody out there knows a pilot who wants to talk about their coffee experiences in airports, send me an email at bestmochalatte@podomatic.com, and we'll get them on the podcast and talk with them about that. So, all right, next place is in Kona, Hawaii. And Kona being the kind of the cradle of coffee in Hawaii. They do grow coffee on all the other islands, but Kona is the most famous, I guess, maybe best marketed taste. In any case, the first place I tried was the Coffee Bean in Hawaii, and this was at the shopping center right there in the middle of Kona, where the ships, the cruise ships port. And it was right in a shopping center next to a supermarket. Kind of a cliche stuff. I mean, if there would have been a Starbucks name on the front walking in, I wouldn't have known a difference. So it's, you know, that kind of cliche coffee style. And it's more of a grab-and-go place, not really a sit-down. And they did have some whole beans for sale, but yeah. The mocha latte I wrote here, my first mocha latte in Kona. Well, served auto-to-go cup, asked on whipped cream, used powdered chocolate, so it had a kind of a chalky feel and unauthentic taste to it. Milk was okay, espresso barely average. I could take it or leave it, really, so 3.9 beans on that. Next up is in Kona, Kailua, and there's kind of they run together. There's the whole Kona section, but then you have like Kona, Kailua, Captain Cook, and all those kind of run right along what they call the Coffee Belt. They're on the southwest side, or west side, southwest side of the Big Island. And I wrote about the Orchid Isle Cafe. You go in, and it's actually really nice. They have very kind of what I would imagine as an island coffee shop. It's very chill. They have a back deck that looks out over the ocean there, down across Kona country to the ocean, and you know, kind of rustic wood tables and very open air kind of feel. Nothing fancy, but you know, with it has a touch of class to it, so very nice environment, and they have some sandwiches and stuff. I wrote about the mocha latte, a pleasant surprise. Asked on the cup and whipped cream, used Kona beans espresso, so the espresso was a little bit brighter in taste, I noticed. Decent foam, a few large bubbles, and nice chocolate. Only thing that could have been better in the drink was the foam and better balance in this drink. So 4.4 beans. Next up is the Green Flash Coffee, and this is actually right around along, I think it's Ali'i Avenue, going from the middle of Kona, the touristy kind of section there, heading south along the coast. And this is a new place, I think it's relatively new. And you need to walk in, just a small little place in front of a hotel timeshare kind of place. And they have a few baked goods, not really any place to sit down inside. They do have some seating outside, underneath some like tables with umbrellas type stuff. I wrote here about the mocha latte, wouldn't drink again. Served auto to go cup, the Aston whipped cream, stale espresso, and it was over pooled, loose foam, the funny tasting chocolate. It just didn't have the good ingredients prepared in the right way. So 2.2 beans on that. Next up is Ona Kona Coffee, which is in Hilo, Hawaii. Now, Hilo, is on the east side of the island, and you have Kona on the west, and you can either drive south along the coast and you'll get to Hilo, or you can go across Saddleback Road between Mauna Kea and Mauna Loa, and you arrive at Hilo, and it has a much more laid-back feel, less commercial feel than Kona does. And the Onokona is actually one of the newer places there, and one of the owners was actually at the coffee workshop, so got to meet her and definitely wanted to check out her cafe. And it's kind of a standalone building with I think one or two drive-thrus that go around it, and you can also walk in and order as well. And very nice people behind the counter, very smiley, friendly faces. So good stuff. Now, the mocha latte over here, I enjoyed this drink. They asked on the cup and whipped cream, used Kona bean espresso, decent foam, but no latte art though. Chocolate was average, good mouthfeel. Espresso could have been a little more present in the drink, so I gave it 4.3 beans. So it's a good drink. I enjoyed it. Next up is Bear's Coffee in Hilo, Hawaii. And this is right downtown in the historic town. Now, if you go downtown Hilo, it reminds me a lot of, I don't know, kind of what you would maybe think of as an old Polynesian trading town, or all old Polynesian port town. And a lot of old buildings, great Thai food around every corner. You know, just kind of old shops. You can buy anything from jewelry. They have this really old theater where every Wednesday morning, once a week, they do this traditional Hawaiian show where they have the guy playing an organ while they show a vintage, the theater organ while they show a vintage Hawaiian movie footage, and have a traditional kind of hula dance performance there. So pretty cool stuff. Now this is right in the heart of that in downtown Hilo, and I wrote, and it has a lot of local flavor, and that's what's most appealing about this place. Has a few kind of, you know, trinkets, I guess, up along the walls, and kind of has that country flair in some of the decoration, but it's definitely a local hangout, and you get the local flavor there. Not touristy at all, which is cool. Now the mocha latte, on the other hand, I wrote, this drink I could take it or leave it. Served out of to-go cup, asked on whipped cream. Espresso was weak and slightly bitter. Pretty loose foam, so-so chocolate, a little chocolate heavy on the balance, 3.2 beans. And next up is back in Kona again, the Coffee Shack. And this is kind of like a little cafe. It's more of a cafe than it is a coffee house, I would say. It was actually packed the day I was there, so obviously it's popular among the locals for at least lunch anyway. And so I ordered, and you can sit out on the deck, and you can overlook, you know, down to the shore, and it's, you know, literally bordered by coffee farms all over, so definitely in the middle of Kona country. The drink, however, this drink left me disappointed. Served out of to-go cup, Aston whipped cream, espresso was bitter. They used Hershey syrup, which I wrote yuck. Foam was loose foam, just not worth the money. It was pretty expensive. So 3.3 beans. Next up is Surfin' A Coffee. Once again, you can substitute your word of choice in for A. I'm sure you can figure it out, but I don't want to go back and edit and bleep everything out, because this is marked as a clean podcast. So this place was, they definitely got the branding part of it down. You can buy t-shirts, mugs, and they had this really old school propane roaster sitting in the front. I don't know if that's what they use or not. And then they have just kind of a few places to sit. But it seemed more about the hype, rather, you know, the hype and the branding rather than the quality of the product that they're putting out there. Because the coffee I wrote here, pretty much every mistake you can make was made in this drink. Served auto to go cup, espresso was way overpulled, it was pulled to the point where the stream was almost clear, way past a minute, that she let the machine run, loose foam, and Hershey's chocolate. Yuck. So they would have had to pay me to drink this drink. So I gave them 0.5 beans, and I only gave them that many beans for remembering to use a cup and all three ingredients. So it was a pretty bad drink. It's one of the worst I've had in a very long time. Yeah, was not good. Kind of ruined my afternoon, actually. But okay, moving on. I won't think about that. Happier thoughts. But the last one in Kona, Hawaii is espresso and ice cream place. I had the name. I couldn't find it on the internet because I believe it's a newer place. But it's right up the road from it's. I'm trying to think what it's near. It's right across from the fire station and police station there in Kona. Because I remember looking across the street and seeing like a giant fire engine. So this place, it's a nice little place. It's mainly an ice cream place that happens to serve coffee. And I'm not sure how fresh the beans are, and that type of thing. The drink I wrote here, so it's probably a good place for ice cream, especially macadamia nut ice cream, which I had my share of last week, which is very good. But I wrote about the drink. This drink came up a little lacking. Served auto-to-go cup, Aston whipped cream, used Hershey's chocolate, yuck. Weak espresso, fairly loose foam. I could take it or leave it. So 3.4 beans on that. And that wraps up my coffee shops for Kona this week. So as you can see, even though I was traveling around in Kona, there's still checking out the coffee shops. And as I mentioned earlier, I wouldn't say the espresso is any better in Kona than it is anywhere else in the United States. The coffee in general is a little bit better because I think there's a little more pride taken in the product, you know, that the fact that it's right there. So the coffee's, I would say, fresher and a little more care and preparation on that. So the coffee's better, and you know, brewed or drip coffee is better in general. So yeah, well, that wraps up the podcast for this week. Coming up next week, you're going to want to stay tuned. Good stuff. I'm going to be coming to you from somewhere on Oahu here, and we're going to get to sit down and talk with Vince from Kona Coffee. So you're going to get to hear about Kona Coffee from a Kona Coffee farmer firsthand. So it's real exciting stuff. And it's going to wrap up the Hawaii trip for next week. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have a lot of fun. I'll have to see if I can, maybe I'll try to get a surfer on the podcast. I ate at this surfer cafe called like Kodo's or something like that here on North Shore. Excellent, excellent pulled pork. But yeah, but it's a coffee podcast. So thanks for tuning in this week. If you want to check out the website, go to bestmochalatte.podomatic.com to see. I usually put a picture up there and a little blurb, and I have some good links up there. There's actually a forum now, and I think I'm gonna try to post some pictures to the forum of some of the coffee plants and the coffee places I've visited and such over the past week. So yeah, check that out. On the right hand side on that page, there's a forum and a couple other good links in there as well to Mod Dog's Music, who Mod Dog is our composer for the podcast. He gives us some exclusive usually is hit music every week, which is you won't hear anywhere else on the internet except on this podcast. So we're always honored to have his music. And yeah, you can also leave a voice message too up on the website. If you call in to 206-202-5127, then you can actually leave a voicemail there. So good stuff. Or you can email bestmochalatte@gmail.com. You can email me either place. I'll get the email on there. So good stuff. Well, thank you for joining me this week. And before I go, I'm going to let you with a new music from Mod Dog. And he calls this Eruption because he heard on the internet there was an eruption in Hawaii, and I got to visit a volcano in Hawaii. So this is Eruption, and until next week, drink what you like and like what you drink. Take care. Bye.